almost gone. Thanks for listening to great speeches and interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts with Energy Innovations. Amory B. Lovins and Edward Lucas discuss how bold solutions for the new energy era is akin to reinventing fire. Dr. Amory B. Lovins is a co-founder, chairman, and chief scientist of the Rocky Mountain Institute, and Edward Lucas is international editor of The Economist. And then after that, does TV help make Americans passive and accepting of authority? Bruce E. Levine, a clinical psychologist and author, discusses how TV makes Americans passive and accepting of authority. He talks with Scott Horton about the mental health issues and social isolation caused by watching television and how the corporate state has essentially colonized Americans who, in effect, feel helpless.
We're going to have our special address by the co-founder, chairman, and chief scientist of Rocky Mountain Institute, Dr. Amory Lovins, who will be speaking on reinventing fire, bold solutions for the new energy era. And chairing the session is Edward Lucas, international editor, The Economist.
Well, thank you very much indeed. It's a really hard act to follow. We've had the perhaps India's most famous sports stars and then their most beloved actors, and we're now going to talk about energy. So I congratulate those of you who are staying and those of you who are heading to the exit. You don't know what you're missing. Energy is a very complicated subject on which everyone has strong views and very simple demands. We want energy to be cheap, we want it to be clean, we want it to be plentiful, and we want it to be safe. And with the best will in the world, it's probably only going to be one of those, at least in the previous paradigm that we've been using. And it's a subject that's beset with myths. And these myths sometimes change over time. So we had an era where nuclear power was going to produce electricity that was too cheap to meter. We had the worries about the exhaustion of fossil fuels and that it was just going to run out. We had the worries, which I used to call the abominable gas man, that our pipelines and our fuel supplies would enslave us to Russia or to OPEC. And, of course, we're worried about cooking the planet. And I did a little bit of maths, because I'm from The Economist and we like numbers, and I worked out that in every second that passes, we burn 90,000 barrels of oil and other liquid fuels. And as we speak, at roughly 3 words a second, that was just about 200,000 just then. Amory Lovins is, I think, an ideal person to bring us to our senses on this subject. He's done 2 TED Talks, which I both recommend to you, 1 short one and 1 long one. And he's also the author of a book called Reinventing Fire, which I heartily commend to you. I'm not going to try and steal his thunder. I would just say that from reading his work and from talking to him, I think he's going to tell us that we can get what we want, but only if we change the way we think about it. Amory Lovins, over to you.
Well, thank you very much for the honor of sharing with you the findings of an ambitious synthesis of American energy solutions that I think have much application to India as well. 60 colleagues and I at Rocky Mountain Institute did the work I'll describe during a year and a half with much help from industry on both content and peer review. And we published it a year ago as a business book called Reinventing Fire, which I think you'll find rather surprising. And let me tell you what we found. But first I should explain that in America we have a rather strange public conversation about energy, and it boils down really to a multiple choice test. Would you rather die of A, oil wars, or B, climate change, or C, nuclear holocaust? Or D, all of the above? Oh, I missed one. How about E, none of the above? That's the choice we're seldom offered. But what if we could actually make energy do our work without working our undoing? Could we imagine fuel without fear? Could we reinvent fire? And we chose this big and poetic title because fire made us human, fossil fuels made us modern, but now we need a new fire that makes us safe, secure, healthy, and durable. That actually is possible, and indeed it would work better and cost less than what we're doing now. So let's see how. 4/5 of the world's energy still comes from burning each year about 19 cubic kilometers of the rotted remains of primeval swamp goo. Those fossil fuels have built our civilization, they've created our wealth, they enriched the lives of billions of people, but their rising costs to our security, economy, health, environment are eroding, if not outweighing, their benefits. So we need a new fire. And switching from the old fire to the new fire means changing two big stories, oil and electricity. Each of them puts 2/5 of the fossil carbon in the air, but these stories are quite distinct. In the U.S., for example, less than 1% of our electricity is made from oil, though 1/3 is made from coal. But they have similarly concentrated uses. 3/4 of our oil fuels transport, 3/4 of our electricity runs buildings, and the rest of both runs factories. So very efficient vehicles, buildings, and factories save a lot of oil and coal, and also natural gas to displace them both. But today's energy system is not only inefficient, it's also disconnected, aging, dirty, insecure. It needs refurbishment. By 2050, though, it could become efficient, connected, distributed, with elegantly frugal autos and buildings and factories, all relying on a secure, modern, and resilient electricity system. So we can thus eliminate our addiction to oil and coal by 2050 and use 1/3 less natural gas while switching to efficient use and renewable supplies. That's the transition I'll describe, tripling our efficiency in using energy and shifting to about 3/4 renewables by 2050, ultimately all renewables. Now by 2050, it turns out, this transition could cost the United States $5 trillion less in net present value than business as usual, assuming that carbon emissions and all other external or hidden costs are worth zero, a conservatively low estimate. And yet, this cheaper energy system could support a 158% bigger economy, all with no oil or coal, or for that matter, nuclear energy. And this transition would need no new inventions and no new national taxes, subsidies, mandates, or laws, thus going round Washington gridlock. Let me say that again. I'm going to tell you how the United States, for example, could get completely off oil and coal by 2050, $5 trillion cheaper, with no act of Congress led by business for profit. The policy changes required could actually be done administratively or at a state level, absent coherent congressional policy. And with such sensible policy support at any whatever level it occurs, we could use our most effective institutions, private enterprise, co-evolving with civil society, sped by military innovation, to go around our least effective institutions. And whether you care most about profits and jobs and competitive advantage, or about national security, or about environmental stewardship, climate protection, and public health, this would make sense and make money. General Eisenhower reputedly said that expanding the boundaries of a tough problem makes it soluble by encompassing more options and more synergies that the solution requires. So, in Reinventing Fire, we integrated all 4 energy-using sectors, transport, buildings, industry, and electricity, and we integrated 4 kinds of innovation, not just technology and public policy, but also design, the way technology is combined, and strategy, new business models, new competitive strategies. And these combinations proved to yield much more than the sum of their parts, especially in creating deeply disruptive business innovations, business opportunities. Where to start? Well, U.S. mobility fuel goes 3/5 to automobiles. So let's start by getting autos off oil. 2/3 of the energy needed to move a typical car is caused by its weight. And every unit of weight or drag that we can save, saving 1 unit of energy at the wheels, saves another 6 units of energy we don't need to waste getting it to the wheels. So it saves altogether 7 units of fuel at the tank. Huge leverage. But for the past 250 years, our 2-ton steel autos have got this epidemic of obesity. They've been gaining weight twice as fast as we have. Today, however, we have, happily, a different set of opportunities. We have ultralight, ultra-strong materials like carbon fiber composites that that can make dramatic weight savings snowball and can even make cars easier and cheaper to build. Lighter and more slippery autos need, of course, less force to move them, so their engine gets smaller, and we can then afford to electrify their traction because the costly fuel cells or batteries get three times smaller and lighter and cheaper. That means that through such vehicle fitness, we can get affordable electrification with a vehicle price that converges to today's vehicle price, and of course the driving cost per kilometer is much steeper, much lower from the start. So these innovations can together transform automaking from wringing tiny incremental improvements out of essentially Victorian steel stamping and engine technologies to the steeply falling costs of three mutually reinforcing technologies, the ultralight materials, their structural manufacturing techniques, and the electric propulsion. The sales can grow and prices can drop even faster with a temporary fee bait, that is, fees on inefficient new cars that pay for rebates to efficient new cars. And the five European programs of this sort are doing very well. The biggest one in its first 2 years tripled the speed of improving auto efficiency. The first Asian fee bait starts up in a couple of months in Singapore.
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Now, the resulting shift to electric autos is going to be as game-changing as shifting from small refinements in typewriters to the dramatic Moore's Law-driven gains in computers. Computers and electronics are now our biggest industry. Typewriter makers have vanished. So vehicle fitness opens a very powerful new competitive strategy for automakers that doubles the oil savings in 40 years, but also makes affordable the electrification that can displace the rest of the oil. America, Japan, China, or India could lead this next automotive revolution. The formidable barriers are much more cultural within the auto industry than they are technological or economic. Detroit's new leaders are starting to tackle these problems. We're helping, but the current leader is Germany. Last year, Volkswagen announced 2013 production of this 1 liter per 100 kilometer carbon fiber plug-in hybrid car. And BMW announced mass production next year of this carbon fiber electric car. They confirmed that its carbon fiber is paid for by needing fewer batteries. And their chief executive said, "We do not intend to be a typewriter maker," because he can look across München to where Olympia used to make excellent typewriters. Audi claimed it's going to beat them both by a year. Audi just showed a few weeks ago a 0.9 liter per 100 kilometer plug-in hybrid carbon fiber SUV concept car. Now, 7 years ago, an even faster and cheaper American manufacturing technology than the ones the Germans are using made in 1 minute this carbon cap. It's a little bowl, a carbon fiber test piece. And if I hit it, you can tell from the sound how extremely strong and stiff it is. Rings like a bell. We could actually pass it around the audience if anybody would like to try that. Thank you, Secretary. And don't worry about dropping it. It's tougher than titanium. It's a test piece for military helmets now shipping and doing very well. Actually, Tom Friedman, the journalist, hit this with a sledgehammer as hard as he could and didn't even scuff it. So such manufacturing techniques for ultralight structures can now scale with aerospace performance, but to automotive speed and cost. And if this were done just in the United States, it would save about 4/5 of the capital needed for automaking. The ultralighting turns out to be free because the simpler automaking and 2/3 smaller propulsion system pay for the carbon fiber. We would save a lot of lives because such materials can absorb 6 to 12 times the crash energy of per kilo that steel can do, and we would save oil equivalent just in the U.S. To 1.5 Saudis or half an OPEC, and those nega barrels, those saved barrels lurking under Detroit, cost $18 each just to pay for the electrification, and they are, of course, domestic, secure, carbon-free, and inexhaustible. And I dare say under the places where autos are made in India, there are similar reserves. It's a very prospective play for nega barrels. Now, the same physics and the same business logic also apply to heavy vehicles. Walmart, for example, has reduced 44% in 6 years the fuel used in its heavy lorry fleet to haul the case of merchandise. That's through better design and logistics. But just the better design, the technological potential, can triple the efficiency of the heavy lorries. And also, we have triple to quintupled efficiency airplanes being designed at places like Boeing and NASA and MIT. When you put all that together, it's almost $1 trillion of net present valued U.S. fuel savings. These innovations in light and heavy vehicles are being sped up by a remarkable set of advances in military energy efficiency, which I've been driving for about 30 years, and it's now flowering just beautifully. And these are speeding efficiency gains in the civilian sector, which uses 50-odd times more oil. So that leverage can help get us all off oil so we don't need to fight over oil. Neg emissions in the Persian Gulf, mission unnecessary. You can imagine the warfighters really like that idea. And it's much the same as what we got when military R&D gave us the internet, the global positioning system, the jet engine industry, and the microchip industry, many of the fundamentals of our modern economy. So 40 years hence, a far more mobile U.S. economy can use no oil, and saving or displacing each barrel at an average cost of $25 rather than buying it for well over $100 saves $4 trillion net present value. Or if we added to that the hidden economic and military costs alone of U.S. oil dependence, we'd be saving $12 trillion. Now, to get mobility without oil, we just need first to get very efficient and then to switch fuels. And those 1 or 2 liter per 100 kilometer autos can use any mixture of hydrogen fuel cells in green, electricity in yellow, or in orange, advanced biofuels. The heavy lorries and the airplanes can realistically use hydrogen or biofuels, or the lorries could burn natural gas, but none of them will need oil. So the most biofuel we might require is only 3 million barrels a day for the United States. That could be made two-thirds from wastes that we pay to dispose of. It would not require any cropland. It would not interfere with, in any way with food production, and it would not harm soil or climate. In fact, we would pay the farmers and ranchers for taking carbon out of the air and putting it back in tilth where it belongs. So our little team speeds up these kinds of oil savings by what we call institutional acupuncture, where the business logic is congested, not flowing properly. We stick little needles in selected points to help the chi move with partners like Ford and Walmart and the Pentagon. And in all six of the sectors that need to be transformed, this long transition is well underway. In fact, 3 years ago, mainstream analysts were starting to see peak oil not in supply, but in demand. And Deutsche Bank even forecast that world oil use could peak about 2016, because oil is simply becoming uncompetitive even at low prices before it becomes unavailable even at high prices. Now, you might think that the electric autos that help that happen are going to stress the already overburdened electricity system, but actually it's the other way around, because when smart autos exchange electricity and information through smart buildings with smart grids, they are adding to the grid flexibility and distributed storage that help the grid accept varying solar and wind power. That's why electric autos make it easier to solve the auto and electricity problems together than separately, and they also converge the oil story with our second big story, saving electricity and then making it differently. And those twin revolutions are bringing to electricity more numerous and diverse and profound disruptions than any other sector, because we've got 21st century technology and speed colliding head-on with 20th and 19th century institutions, rules, and cultures.
So on, and until there's no longer Now for something completely different.